This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Today, what we've decided to do is bring three of our analysts in to talk about propaganda messaging and trends that we've seen in 2017 among three terrorist groups that specifically target the United States: Al-Qaeda and some of its affiliates. Then we're going to talk specifically about one of those affiliates, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP. And then finally, we're going to talk about the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, otherwise known as ISIS. So to begin, we'll start with Travis to talk about Al-Qaeda. Can you give us a little background? What have we seen in 2017? Where are we at now in terms of that group, in terms of their messaging and propaganda?
Absolutely. And thank you, Dean. So this year, Al-Qaeda senior leadership, which is based out of Afghanistan and Pakistan, has produced approximately 74 pieces of propaganda, which is a mix of testimonies, audio messages, video messages. And all together, this was a large increase from 2016, where we only saw 30 pieces of propaganda. And overall, we're still continuing to see similar themes that are being promoted by senior leadership and affiliates, which is calls for attacks in the West, the importance of unity, the targeting of Jewish interests, and revenge for the death of Osama bin Laden. However, something that we've seen this year that we haven't seen in the past is back at the end of 2016, when the Nusra Front had claimed to split with senior leadership in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda has extensively focused on garnering support and building unity on the ground in Syria. And we've seen statements both from Hamza bin Laden, which is the son of Osama bin Laden, and Ayman al-Zawahiri, which is the emir of Al-Qaeda, in Syria this year. Now, something to add is, of those 74 pieces of propaganda, 46% of this propaganda was focused on testimonies in talking about the dispute between the Nusra Front and Al-Qaeda.
So that would indicate that Syria is very important to them, what's going on in Syria right now in that battle, right?
Absolutely. And it's something we continue to see.
So Al-Qaeda sort of has a reputation in terms of its propaganda of being really old school and generally being resistant to change, right? So most of us remember a lot of remarks from Osama bin Laden and then later from Zawahiri, the stereotypical picture of whoever speaking, sitting down, AK-47 next to him, in front of basically a blank wall or a rock wall, and then they just sort of talk at the audience for an hour or two. So is that the same? Have they, you know, moved into the 21st century, or are they sticking with that style?
I'll give you a two-part answer. So the introduction of Hamza bin Laden in 2015, and now we've seen him 2 years later, and especially this year, emerge as more of a propaganda tool for the Al-Qaeda organization or Al-Qaeda network. That is, it seems to be an attempt to appeal to a younger generation, a more tech-savvy generation, but they're still not doing it on the level that groups like ISIS are, who are much more tech-savvy, who have a much larger pool of recruits and foreign fighters. But what Al-Qaeda does do is it appeals to an individual who is much more theologically focused, who is more interested in about learning about the religion and about the history of Al-Qaeda.
So it's not really going for the same demographic as, let's say, a lot of ISIS propaganda, where it's generally young men, might not be super steeped in all the nuance of Islam, and looking for sort of a lot of action videos. They're tailoring their message for people who will sit through an hour or two of lengthy, dry discussions, right?
Absolutely. And this kind of gives a distinct characteristic of what Al-Qaeda senior leadership is like. Now, the Al-Qaeda network as a whole is much more decentralized organization we've seen than in previous phases of Al-Qaeda. today, the power is really given to the affiliates, allowing the network to exploit local conflicts while absorbing a wider pool of recruits. So the propaganda we're seeing is more directed towards these regional conflicts or civil wars, like in Syria, in Yemen, in Somalia, or the Sahara, or the Sahel of Africa.
So we haven't done this before. I'm not asking for sort of any sort of official answer, but just your sort of impression. If you were going to grade Al-Qaeda on the quality of their propaganda or the effectiveness of their propaganda, assuming the goal is to inform, persuade, mobilize its listeners, what letter grade would you give Al-Qaeda?
Well, looking across the Al-Qaeda spectrum and really focusing in on Al-Qaeda senior leadership, their propaganda hasn't changed that immensely, and I would continue to grade them as being average, so about a C.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. We're going to move to talk about Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP. Alyssa, what's been going on in Yemen over the past year?
Well, it was a busy year for Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula as far as propaganda. They had over 100 pieces of AQAP-branded propaganda published this year, both in the English language, but mostly in Arabic Telegram channel. Their propaganda can be categorized into audio, video, written statements, infographics. So there's a large variety of propaganda that they push out. Some of the themes in their propaganda this year have been attacks in the West. That's a continuing theme. The regional conflict in Yemen. The civil war is now approaching its third year. And also joint statements and supports for its affiliates, such as Al-Shabaab, AQIM, and some other of the affiliates. Important dates or important pieces of propaganda that have come out this year. January, there was a raid in Yemen by U.S. forces. During that raid, Anwar al-Awlaki's young daughter was killed. And that's feelings about al-Awlaki and some of his sermons resurfaced and spoke about how Muslims were, you know, being targeted by the United States. And that provided a lot of the propaganda early this year.
Can I interrupt you on that one?
Sure.
So I remember you wrote a couple pieces, I think, about that during the time. So it clearly was something that AQAP saw as an opportunity to generate propaganda. Did we see any results of that, like of that propaganda sort of campaign? Did we see, were there any sort of attacks that sort of referenced that raid or the death of Al-Awlaki's daughter or anything that came, or did it kind of fall flat?
I think it fizzled out for the most part. So there was a lot of AQAP supporters on social media that posted photos of deaths following the raid, especially of small children that were collateral damage. So that brought up a lot of, you know, topics for the propaganda, but really it kind of fizzled out after, I would say, about February. And we did hear from Al-Rimi, the leader of AQAP, a few times during that time period, which is unusual. But then again, something significant happened that kind of brought him out of the woodwork.
But we didn't see any attacks by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula or their sympathizers who, like, referenced those raids, for example.
No.
Is that correct?
No, we didn't see anything as far as that goes. In April, we saw AQAP released their fifth Inspire guide and the only one they put out this year dedicated to the Westminster attacks in London, which occurred in March 2017. And that was largely tactical guidance and praise for the attack, even though it was not an AQAP attack.
And that's not unusual, right? So they've put out those guides for ISIS attacks and
Correct.
Things like that as well, right?
Correct. So they put out four last year, and none of them were officially claimed AQAP attacks. I believe they were all ISIS attacks. But again, they wanted to toss their hat in the ring and get in their two cents on them.
They really seem to be set on this branding of Inspire, right? So they have the Inspire magazine.
Correct.
They Inspire have God, you talked
right.
about.
In May, Al-Rimi came out with the first Inspire message. That was a video message of him speaking, focused on targeting the West. And that, although that was in Arabic, it was specifically subtitled in English. So it was meant to reach an English-speaking audience and then get them kind of inspired. And then in August, we saw issue number 17 of Inspire magazine. That's the only one that came out this year. That was dedicated to train derailments And that did not get a lot of attention either. So although they've come out with a lot of propaganda this year, a lot of it has not been English language focused, and therefore it just hasn't gotten a lot of attention.
And the Inspire magazines, traditionally AQAP publishes two a year, is that right?
Correct. On average, they're two a year. Sometimes in the early days, it was four. Sometimes I would say on average, it's been two. We did see two last year, and it's November, and we've only seen one, and it came out in August. So, yeah.
I can't help it. Every time I see ISIS or I see AQAP try to, you know, push this Inspire brand, I just have in my mind this picture of this really awful gift shop somewhere with with branded material that nobody's going to buy. The Al-Rimi message, I remember when that came out, that seemed really important. What was he talking about in that one?
Well, he was talking about specifically the raids that had happened and how the U.S. had continued to target Yemen specifically and, you know, innocent Muslims that out of that raid, that there were people that were innocently killed that weren't even members of AQAP. So, again, the injustice of the United States continuing to target Yemen, and that's been a continuing theme. Just a side note that they've had more drone attacks in Yemen this year than probably ever. So yeah, they're running scared there right now. So which could account for the lack of propaganda.
So last question, Alyssa. AQAP, at least certainly before the rise of ISIS, was really active and probably the most influential in terms of motivating homegrown violent extremists to carry out attacks. How have they been doing? Have they had any direct appeals to sort of people in the United States or people in the West to carry out attacks?
So in May, Al-Rimi, the leader of AQAP, stated in a video, "We are a single united body. An American Muslim is the same as a Yemeni Muslim, and a Yemeni Muslim is the same as an Australian Muslim." So again, we keep seeing the theme that a Muslim is a Muslim wherever you are, and that is your duty to perform a jihad or a lone offender attack. That's the encouragement.
Excellent. We're going to pass it off to Dylan, who's going to talk a little bit about ISIS. So, Dylan, what have we seen in 2017, and where are we now in terms of ISIS?
Thanks, Dean. So ISIS is currently facing a lot of battlefield losses that are directly attributing to a decline in propaganda. Since ISIS declared their caliphate, ISIS has lost 95% of the territory that they've held. They've lost major battles in Mosul, in Raqqa. They also were attempting to take a city in Marawi in the Philippines. They've also been kicked out of Deir ez-Zor and Rawa. Both the Iraqi and the Syrian governments are considering ISIS territory held within their countries completely destroyed. And now ISIS is currently on the retreat, heading towards more of an insurgency. So how does that actually affect the propaganda? We've seen a propaganda decrease, especially since ISIS lost Raqqa, which was the capital. Every month, consistently for a year, since September 2016, ISIS has produced their English language magazine, Ramaya. And October was the first month where ISIS did not produce one. And we also still haven't seen one in November.
I've seen some people who say that's not a big deal, but I think we have a different opinion of that. I think that's a really big deal, right? Because when ISIS declared their caliphate in June of 2014, they made this big show about how they were a state and they began doing all sorts of things. And they didn't follow through with a lot of it, but they're going to deliver social services. They're going to produce their own currency, which they didn't do. But one of the things they were doing was they were going to produce multi-language. We talk about it in terms of English, but I think it came out in 8 or 12 languages at some point. Sort of call to the faithful, get people to come to Iraq and Syria, demonstrate how awesome it is in the caliphate. And then, as you mentioned, as they lost that territory, it seems to me that if they could produce those magazines, they would. And so it's a sign that they can't even get a magazine out on time. I mean, do you agree with that? That was kind of a leading question. I apologize.
No, I do agree. I think it is significant that we haven't seen the Ramaya, only because when ISIS, before Ramaya, they used to produce Dabiq every month, and that was named for the city in Syria that they eventually lost. And immediately after that, they put out the Ramaya, which is Rome in Arabic, to essentially say that they're going to one day conquer Rome. So they have been very strict with their brand. ISIS is very good with deadlines. They're very good with their propaganda production. So I think it's very significant that since losing Raqqa, the capital, we haven't seen the Ramaya get released.
Let's assume for a second that in December or January, we see a new Ramaya come out. Are there indicators that you would look for to give you some hints as to whether their propaganda production is sort of back full speed ahead or not so much?
So like Travis mentioned earlier, ISIS does produce the best propaganda in terms of production quality. So I believe that if we were to see a new Ramayah and the production quality was just lacking as opposed to previous issues, like if we saw a lot of spelling errors, 40 pages, maybe if we were to see it shortened, just to see that they weren't able to produce their full Ramayah magazine that they're usually known for. I also believe that the content would change. So Ramayah usually consists of articles about terror tactics or different articles to motivate fighters, but a lot of it includes a roundup of their military successes as what they refer to as successes. So I believe that if we were to see a lot more calls for the fighters to get more motivated, a lot of the ISIS propaganda that has been coming out since the loss of Raqqa has essentially been challenging any ISIS fighters that feel discouraged or that feel that now that ISIS is losing this territory, that ISIS might not be the big name terror organization anymore. ISIS also recently just put out an article slamming Hamza bin Laden, trying to discredit al-Qaeda because they're really struggling to continue and to keep up their fan base.
And that's something that's interesting between the two groups is there's still, it seems like at least once or twice a year, somebody floats the idea that maybe ISIS and al-Qaeda will sort of join forces again. But at least propaganda-wise, they're still taking shots at each other. Is that correct?
Yeah, as ISIS is even on the decline like they are, I mean, they're still finding time to take shots at al-Qaeda. So really, they most likely won't team up.
And I would say, you know, propaganda-wise, I think taking shots at each other is, again, a propaganda tool in itself, is elevating its organization to be more credible in its ideologies and beliefs. But what I will say is that I think organizationally, they're really not in full competition with another. ISIS has been the priority target of the U.S. coalition forces, while al-Qaeda has really focused on going down to regional conflicts and blending in. So that's why we may have not seen that clash of propaganda quite as much as we have in the past. Because as ISIS is declining, al-Qaeda is again trying to remove itself from that fray, so to speak.
They're both, though, competing for sort of the title of sort of the leader of the global jihadi movement, right?
Absolutely.
Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Got a lot to say about that, but I won't bore everyone on this podcast about that. So, Dylan, ISIS is suffering a decrease in propaganda. They're losing some capability because they're losing territory on the ground. But ISIS has always had a pretty rabid fan base. What's going on with them?
So since we have seen the official ISIS propaganda taking a downturn, almost immediately after Raqqa was liberated, pro-sympathizers of ISIS were posting, encouraging other sympathizers and supporters to post ISIS propaganda on all of their social media pages. So while ISIS itself may be in a decline, they are still encouraging their supporters to spread their message and to inspire additional supporters.
And I know why ISIS, I think like al-Qaeda to a large extent too, they do like to have control of their brand. You know, desperate times may call for desperate measures. And I imagine ISIS is not going to renounce sympathizers who are trying to push that group's message. Is that fair?
It's very fair, especially with the fact that a lot of the messaging has been encouraging the people who they are currently losing and the people that are becoming disdained with the caliphate. They're not going to turn those folks away if they're willing to spread their message on their social media pages, especially while ISIS is busy on the battlefield.
So I wanted to ask a question. All three of you talked about quantity of propaganda and how many pieces last year or since a particular battle. How do you track that? What do you do?
You kind of have to simplify to some extent because we can't look at every sympathizer that starts posting about their terrorist organization. So you break it down into categories, whether it be written statements, audio messages, video messages, or you know, a bucket for new types of propaganda. And from there, there are websites such as Jihadology or Site Intel Group that are able to post these types of propaganda on their websites for us to view. And from there, we're able to access them, get summaries of them, which really help categorize the types of propaganda. But when we're looking across a broad network, such as al-Qaeda, you have all different types of propaganda being produced at all times of the day.
So when you're talking here, when we've been talking about propaganda, you're talking about official propaganda from those official organizations.
Right.
Generally,
that's,
right?
That's official propaganda that's come out of their
media arm.
Their media arms, each individual media arm. So every affiliate has their own media arm, and that's being pushed out via, you know, a controlled mechanism, their Telegram channels that they control. So that's how everything's coming out.
You know, and I forgot, I realize now I forgot to ask, so let me go around real quick. Alyssa, if you had to give AQAP a letter grade for the quality and effectiveness of their propaganda, what would you give them?
I would give them probably a B minus, because I think that although they've continued to push out the propaganda, it's not as focused. It's kind of all over the place. And it is Yemen, you know, focused. And it's based on operations that are going on there, not necessarily in the West. So they don't need flashy graphics to appeal to the Yemeni population like they do to an English language speaking population.
Dylan, certainly in 2015, I think most people, the conventional wisdom was that ISIS would have gotten an A or an A-plus for their propaganda. We're at the end of 2017. Where would you place them now?
So it's still a little early to tell. I would at this moment, I would give them a B-minus. Back in their heyday, like you said, that they would have been an A-plus. Actually, back in their heyday, Charlie Winter, a researcher with the International Center for the Study of Radicalization and Political Violence, broke down ISIS narratives in six different categories. He broke it down into utopia, military, mercy, victimhood, brutality, and belonging. So back in when ISIS was in their heyday, most of their propaganda was the utopia, that the caliphate is this wonderful place, please come join us, that just to encourage people to want to become a member of the Islamic State. But as right now, most of the propaganda that is produced officially, they're trying to show that they're still in the fight and that they're still taking land and that they're still able to fight the Syrian military and the Iraqi military. So right now, I would give them a B minus, but I think that grade would change, especially as they continue to lose more territory.
And it's got to be tough when you've lost 95% of your territory to try to find ways to spin that as victories. And so I think when I've seen some of their propaganda in the past, it gets hyper local. And so it's like, hey, at this bridge, we blew up two tanks or we captured 10 Syrian army members, right? So they're looking at very, very tactical victories, even if the larger battle that they were in, they lost. Is that right?
Exactly. As how ISIS used to, a lot of it was very strategic. It was very, look at this town that we conquered, where now it's, we just executed two spies, or we were able to destroy one Humvee, or most of their battlefield updates are coming out, and they're coming out slowly, and they're very, a lot more tactical and localized.
Well, thank you very much. We're getting close to the end of the year, and so maybe we'll be the first people to ask about predictions for 2018. Does anyone see anything dramatically changing in terms of propaganda? Maybe not about your organizations, but just in terms of themes of propaganda or how propaganda is delivered, consumed, anything like that. Do you see anything for 2018?
I think that at least in terms of AQAP, they'll continue to push out the same quantity of propaganda. You know, we might see an extra Inspire next year or something. I think it depends on, you know, what happens with kind of what happens with ISIS, like what they're on the downturn, AQAP or AQ may be on the upturn, and we'll see an increase in propaganda come from them.
They'll try to capitalize on that.
And going off what Alyssa says, I think the Al-Qaeda network as a whole is going to be very reactive to what happens to ISIS and how the coalition forces begin targeting its affiliates in counterterrorism missions across, you know, the globe. Typically, Al-Qaeda has always reacted when it's received more pressure from the United States to a more of an anti-West propaganda focus. But because they've been focused on ISIS for so long, they've been able to become less visible.
I think as far as ISIS, I think they were so used to putting out their mainstream propagandas, like we discussed earlier, their Ramayas and the various videos and things like that, that they really are going to need to rely on their supporters for assistance in actually spreading that propaganda. So in 2018, we'll probably see ISIS rely more on their supporters for propaganda distribution.
It'll be interesting to see how or if they can coordinate messages among their sympathizers, or if they just sort of let them run wild. So everyone, I'd like to thank you all very much to all you listeners out there.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.